I took a seat several rows ahead of her and the journey passed, unscented and peaceful. When we arrived at the terminus by the little kiosk, I kept my seat, letting her pass and get off ahead of me. I was determined to follow her home. Right there beside the bus stop there were some buildings, and to my amazement she disappeared, almost like a phantom passing through walls. There must be some hidden entrance, of course, but by the time I reached her point of disappearance she was gone. That she lived anywhere in that place, which seemed remarkably like a rabbit warren and where I had always assumed fishermen and their whores lived, was another mystery. But my sleuthing had failed, she had eluded me. Ah, but not quite. The local doctor had the habit of calling in to check on Shen every so often, and the next time he arrived I happened to be in the room taking dictation and instructions for answering correspondence. He checked his patient, had a chat, and I accompanied him to his waiting car. Ayo, by the way, Dr. B, there is a woman in Houth who rather fascinates me. I wonder if you know her. I went on to describe the woman, discreetly making no mention of the smell that accompanied her. Ayo, you mean Missy, I think. Is she a little, well, not too well washed? Ai nodded, and he went on, Ayo, rather sad, she is a little, not quite right, harmless, you know, but not quite right. Has plenty of money, or so I believe. Chooses to live the way she does. Dosna TMT get on with the family, or some such thing. She has some title before her name, honorable, yatmm, not sure. Her father has a lot of land, a big place. You know how it is, dash. Ayo, he got in the car and wound down the window. Ayo, well, yatmll be around again in a few weeks. The good doctor seems well enough, well enough. Good day to you, dear lady. A, and he was gone. Not very helpful information. But now at least I knew her name and that I had not been wrong in my assumptions about her birth. It must have been a matter of weeks after that that Chen and I were down by the harbor taking photographs one day. It was one of those gusty, invigorating kind of days, when you have to hang on to everything you might be carrying, when your hair blows in your eyes, and the salt in the air leaves its tang on your lips. It was mid-morning, as I remember. The fishing boats had all left the safety of the harbor and were out on the open sea doing their work trying for a catch. In that kind of weather most of the locals who were not fishermen kept indoors. They were reared in this place and the wind and waves meant little to them in the way of romance. It was a day to be inside. The place was deserted. I was the aide-donkier on these kind of excursions, carrying and keeping the cameras dry, looking after the different lens. The wind was too high for a tripod, it would have rocked and cancelled any use it may have been. Better to rely on a steady hand and a fast exposure. Shen carried the light meter around his neck and checked it constantly. We were standing halfway along the far side of the harbor wall when my interest was caught by a figure approaching from the village. I was watching Chen and only half saw her out of the corner of my eye, but the minute the shot was completed I turned to look, and yes, it was she, it was Missy. Advancing, resembling a figure from a Jane Austen novel, a great cloak wrapped around her, flapping and billowing as the wind caught and whipped it. She had the hood over her head, clasping it tightly at the neck, but there was no doubt about it, there was no mistaking her walk, it was Missy. What on earth could she be up to walking along the harbor wall so purposefully as if she were intent on going somewhere, but there was nowhere to go except into the sea. Ayo, look Chen, there TMS that woman, the one I was telling you about, the one who gets on the Dublin bus all the time. Where can she be going in this weather along the harbour wall? Ai was more than a little curious and had a feeling of dread. What if she were going to jump into the sea? He turned round slowly and casually. Ayo, well, for one thing there are two of her, Ai, he said as he turned back at me. Air must be a schizophrenic, not properly aligned in her body, in fact just now completely out of it, she TMS literally beside herself. Air, what do you mean? Air, buttercup, you take the camera stuff home. She TMS in trouble. Yatmll, see if I can talk to her. Hurry up now, Yatmll, see you at home in a little while. A. Somewhat disappointed, I did his bidding and set off for home, carrying the photographic equipment and leaving him to approach Missy. As I climbed the hill, I thought about her. Schizophrenia, he had said. Only recently we had had a letter to deal with from the mother of a child afflicted with this illness. There was little that the doctors could do for the child. They had no real understanding of the disease, and even if told that it involved a malalignment whereby the astral body was unable to align itself with the physical body, thus making messages from the overself through the silver cord unintelligible, they would not believe it. They could not accept the astral body as a reality, nor the silver cord, and certainly not the overself. From the viewpoint of a psychic, though, it was so simple, so obvious, it could be clearly seen. Yet to a non-clairvoyant with a closed mind it was unacceptable. As I thought about it, I marveled that we consider ourselves so clever, so civilized, so advanced, when in reality we are so blind, unable to even consider anything beyond the limits of our three-dimensional range. The upshot of the encounter with Missy was that Chen did manage to get through to her. He did manage to effect some kind of improvement, but it was cut short by unfavorable publicity and press persecution, by his own heart problems and by the need to move away from Ireland, right away across the ocean to Canada. Good deeds have far-reaching effects, but so do bad ones. Because of the jealousy and spite directed at Chen, it is doubtful that this poor woman never reached a full recovery. What happened to her I have no idea, but at least she must have glimpsed something better. Some reason and purpose for her life in the few meetings she had with him. Knowing his own ability to actually see what afflicted her, and knowing that few others could see as he did, Chen had felt it his responsibility to do what he could. That was a part of his grace. And so we came to Canada. Those two words, AO landed immigrant, I stamped on our passports, to me represented a stigma to be swallowed along with pride, but not so to Chen and Rat Mab. They suffered no hang-up, and seemingly no trauma in the face of a completely new and different life. In fact, I think they welcomed it, seeing it as progressive. Britain had not been kind to either of them, although Rat Mab was a British subject born and bred. Life at home in Canada went on much as before. A lot of time was devoted to the mail. It became a feature of the day, much the same as a regular job. In fact, that is what it was. We took a postal box at the post office wherever we happened to be living in Canada, and each day I would collect the mail once, sometimes twice. Readers being on the whole fickle, tending to be swayed by public opinion and reviews, it was not entirely a dependable job, and certainly not a paying one. Sometimes there was a lot of mail, at other times it was sparse, but even authors need holidays, so the occasional sparsity wasn't TMT a bad thing, except that it reflected poor book sales, and book sales were our livelihood. Chen displayed great care and high principles in dealing with the mail. Invariably he was resting on his bed when I dumped the pile on front of him each day. He would sit upright, reach for the sturdy wooden tray which served as a desktop placed on his knees, and get out his paper knife. I would bring up a chair, Rat Mab another, and we would be ready, once I had found a pencil and pad to write on. His habit was to look through the pile and select any letters he knew to be related to business, such as from his agent, publisher or accountant, and these had to be dealt with first of all. He would often dictate a full reply. If a long one, he would use his handheld dictating machine, favoring Sony equipment. And if it was shorter, I took it down in my unique form of shorthand, undecipherable to anyone else, not because it was secret but because I had never learned standard shorthand. With those letters out of the way, we might pause for tea and biscuits, or perhaps tea and chocolate, which he loved. Then it was on to the fan mail. He opened all the letters before taking any out of the envelopes, methodically slitting them open with his paper knife, showing his customary organized mind, and piling them in the order he felt he wanted to read them. Any stamps which he considered worthy of keeping for a collector would be put in a special envelope for such time as a collector might come along, or for someone he knew already who collected stamps. Letters from those who had written before were put in first place at the top of the pile and usually read with great interest. He had taken time to reply to their first requests, and seeing a second or third letter from the same person was similar to seeing a letter from an acquaintance. I have a friend who took great exception to the message in one of his books, a later edition of A.O. the Third Eye, I believe it was, in which Chen reminded readers that it costs money to reply to letters. Postage costs did indeed mount up, as of course did stationery, and during the times when we found it hard to make ends meet, replying to letters became a problem, but never such an insurmountable problem that they were ignored if the writer was genuine and had himself a problem, and even if no postage was enclosed, the letter would be dealt with to the best of Chen T.M.'s ability. It would not be true to say he answered every letter. He didn't TMT, but he managed to reply to a very large percentage, and always to those in need. His replies were well considered and personal. He would go to great trouble sometimes to find out addresses, names, places for people who requested them. Any metaphysical or occult question was easy for him. He never needed to consult dictionaries or reference books. It was there in his head, and he often replied at length to get the point over, and the same with the majority of medical questions. A lot of people who wrote had difficulties of a very complex nature, and he treated their letters with respect and privacy. After letters had been answered, they were put through our paper shredder, so no trace was ever left for priors. We never kept copies of his replies except, of course, for business letters. The process of opening letters and dictating replies took a great part of the morning. In some cases he would simply give me the gist of what he wanted to say and I composed the reply. As time went on and in the face of declining health, this became more frequent, but I knew him so well and was so familiar with his style and response, it was as if it were written by him. Naturally, he always checked such letters. Once typed, Ratmab would check for mistakes and pass it to Chen, who then signed it after a brief scan to make sure all was in order. There were occasions when he picked up some special feeling from a letter, either through the touch or simply a vibration. One I particularly remember was from a woman in Brighton. She earned her living by teaching the piano. I forget exactly her reason for writing, but in his reply he mentioned that he felt she could do well as an artist. He could see clearly from handling her letter that she would be successful. No mention of painting had been made in her letter, and one can only imagine her surprise on being told she could become an artist. This was not something that had ever crossed her mind. Nevertheless, on his advice she did take up oil painting, and sure enough within a remarkably short space of time she became a skilled artist, exhibiting at Burlington House where one of her paintings was actually purchased for the Queen and became part of the royal collection. Another way he communicated with some readers was by tape recordings. At the beginning, in London in the 1958 AMS, he was using a wire recorder which many people perhaps have never seen. The worst thing, so far as I remember, was that the wire got tangled in a most horrible way from time to time, and I have a picture before me, which surely has to be factual, of some cat playing with the wire he was trying to unravel. But soon tape recorders came in and it was not long before he was trying out different makes. I believe the first tapes he sent to people were the round reel-to-reel variety, then the larger oblong ones, and finally the minis. He was extremely interested in electronics and I would say he enjoyed the messages to and from various people. It gave him a valid reason for using the recording machines. He spoke slowly and very clearly, never with notes, and he was often quite humorous, so I can imagine his recordings giving a great deal of pleasure to readers. Occasionally Ratmab joined him in this, and even the cats had their say with their unmistakable Siamese voices. Voices which, similar to Eastern music, you either love or loathe. We lived in dozens of places in Canada. Belongings were never allowed to accumulate because it would have meant a pretty awful upheaval when time for the next move came along. Sometimes we moved within the town or city, sometimes we moved further afield, but it was all the same when it came to picking things up and putting them down in a new place. I am not sure if it was his nature to be always on the go or if circumstances dictated it. He seemed to be hurrying to get done what he had to do, as if time were running out. in sharp contrast to his active mind and the speed at which he achieved what he set out to do, he possessed an astonishing inner peace and tranquility. The constant moves would have created havoc with an ETMS nervous health had it not been for his inner calm and peace and detachment from worldly values. As it was, it became a normal and acceptable way of life. The people we rubbed shoulders with during all this time were as varied as the moves themselves, and here I have a confused memory from which it is hard to accurately select one face from another in the jumble, or one person from another who received such and such a gift or act of grace. It is only safe to say that wherever he went he left a deep and lasting impression, possibly not always a favorable one. There were those who, like a dog when he senses something foreign, raised their hackles. There was something here they did not understand and it made them feel odd, fearful. To generalize, it could be said that this group was lacking in spiritual awareness. Their values were purely materialistic, they were bound by tradition and entrenched beliefs arising from false religions. But there were many more who recognized a great man, who responded and who gains new contentment from their contact, however brief it may have been. Although hardly any close and enduring friendships were made, his sincerity was real, but he was as a ship that passes in the night, here today, gone tomorrow. There is one person I can see in my mind quite clearly exactly as she was, trundling around in her motorized wheelchair making life hellish for all and sundry who had the misfortune to cross her path. That is, until she met Chen. She had an acid tongue and a mean disposition. She was not only warped physically, it seemed her soul was eroded as well. It was in Alberta that we met her. We lived at the time in a new apartment building near to downtown, on the top floor, or near enough the top, and we had taken two small apartments which the management agreeably knocked into one to accommodate us. They were good at accommodating people. It was hard to get tenants. The oil industry had not yet taken off in that part of the country and no sane person wanted to live there, so they were happy to have us, complete with cats. Which was not always the case in other Canadian cities. Pets were and still are banned in the majority of rental places, which was one of the reasons we moved away from Vancouver. On the ground floor, under the apartments, there were shops and I have to say it was convenient to just whip downstairs when it was either too hot or too cold to spend much time outdoors shopping, which seemed to be the case most of the time. In this ground floor area that passed as a mall there was a Safeway and a pharmacy, as well as a number of offices, and between the two shops we managed to find most things needed for basic survival. If we wanted books, electronic or photographic equipment, stationery, we had to go further afield, but the pharmacy, or drug store as they are generally called in North America, always had a good supply of magazines and the odd decent paperback. The new magazines came in on a Tuesday, and each Tuesday I was dispatched downstairs to see what had come in. Although most of the things Chen liked were monthly publications, Popular Science, Mechanics Illustrated, Photography, magazines about cars, electronics, telescopes, current events, and so on dash and there were an astonishing number of such publications they came out at different times of the month, never leaving him bereft of reading material. If I made a mistake, it was easy to go back and exchange. The pharmacist was a pleasant if slightly colorless man, willing to please and keep a good customer. On the memorable day that I met Mary for the first time it was raining and it wasn't EMT too warm either. It was a miserable day, which in itself was unusual for that part of Canada known, as it is, for clear blue skies even on the coldest of days when it could be many degrees below zero, and the misery of the day seemed a suitable setting for the encounter. It must have been a Tuesday because it was book day. I took the elevator down to the lobby and ran around the corner with my umbrella up, although there was a kind of canopy all around the building, and because it was Tuesday I knew there would be new magazines in if I was not too early. As I glanced at my watch I realized that I might indeed be too early, and Mike Green, the pharmacist, would no doubt be in the back room eating his lunch with the big box of magazines in his office unopened and waiting for him to slip the wrappings so his helper could arrange them in the rack. She was not too bright, this helper, but she could manage to find the usual things from toothpaste to condoms to aspirins while Mike ate his two tubs of strawberry yogurt and his apple and banana, an unchanging, dependable lunch. Her name was Molly and she loved to gossip, especially when Mike had the sign "AO gone to lunch, please leave prescriptions in the box" atop his high pharmacy counter placed on a cardboard box with a slit in it. She seemed to imagine he had no idea what was going on in the place when he was at the back eating lunch, but he heard it all and sighed over every word when he was not too engrossed in the AO Globe and Mailer newspaper. I pushed open the door and found a very wet floor with wheel marks and a good deal of mud. Not many people used wheelchairs around town except Chen at that time because it was just too difficult for them to manage. There were no ramps and they were treated almost as pariahs. The fit and able either stared at them or looked away in embarrassment, quite different from today when wheelchairs and their occupants are accepted as normal and they are not confined anymore to the house or balcony as they were then. So it was a point of interest that a wheelchair-bound person must be in the drugstore somewhere. I went over to the rack to see what, if anything, was in since last week, and on the other side of the quite large rack I heard a pesky, high, thin voice ranting at Molly in what seemed an unreasonable manner. "Ayo, no, no, why can't a TMT you ever get it right, you silly girl? I want that soap, I always take that soap. If you had any sense you would TMD know that by now." There was a sharp banging to accompany and accentuate her words, as though she was rapping on the floor with a stick in annoyance. I edged up to the end of the rack and casually looked around to the other side. There she was, a tiny, shrunken woman, her swollen legs stuck out in front of her, too short to reach the footrest, her grey hair permed and frizzy, dried out and hardly covering her pate. Purple hands with their twisted fingers, one grasping the wheelchair controls, and in the other a walking stick, obviously the source of the banging. "Ayo, by this time anyone would think you're TMD no. Where TMS Mike anyway?" She wheeled her chair around quite skillfully and was heading my way, obviously looking for Mike who undoubtedly was shuddering in the back room, wondering if he could get away with remaining where he was, or if she would sniff him out. By the time this rather alarming incident was over, Mike having appeared in order to placate her, and she demanding the soap be put on the bill since she had no money with her, I was already beside the door as it was clear the magazines had not yet been put out in the rack so I might just as well come back later. I was about to head out when I saw the wheelchair coming towards me at a startling speed. I grabbed the door handle and wrenched open the door to let her out before she knocked me over, when to my amazement she pulled up dead in her tracks, and now laid into me. "Ayo, don't you TMT need the door opened by anyone, thank you very much, and especially not by the likes of you. But m've no idea, have you? Just get out of my way, will you? Move." And, thankfully, with that parting shot she was gone in a whirl of wheels. "Ayo, goodness, Molly, who was that?" I asked, almost in a state of shock. This diminutive woman, whoever she was, had an enormous ego, even if not a very pleasant one. "Ayo, that a TMS Mary. She TMS a demon poorly disguised. Looks after the handicraft workshop for the disabled at the back of the place. Bet the atmer all dead scared of the old so-and-so. Air TMS no pleasing her. All the same, she TMS not in very good shape, is she? Shouldn't a TMT be too hard on her. Air Molly, what me too kind. Whatever shape she TMS in, air TMS no excuse for such rudeness. I walked back to the apartment, sobered and thoughtful. By this time Chen was already using a wheelchair for most of our excursions outside, which, because of the inclement weather, were by no means daily. But the next time we went out I suggested to him that we look for the place for disabled people. It's somewhere at the back, ATM they do handicrafts there, I explained. I was curious to see this small but aggressive woman again on her own ground. This time, I reassured myself, if we did meet her I would fade into insignificance beside Chen. And that is precisely what happened. We found the place quite easily. As Molly had said, It was at the back of the building, and quite unobtrusive on account of the windows, the type you can see out of but not into. The door was extra large, supposedly to give easy access for wheelchairs, and it was painted a dark green with a simple sign in black reading "Air Workshop. AAO This must be the place." Later TMSC if anyone is about. Chen was not known for timidity, although he could never be called pushing. He asked me to knock on the door. "AO no, louder, buttercup, thea TMLL never hear that polite little tap tap. A at his bidding I knocked quite hard, but we still had to wait, although there was obvious activity inside. Finally the door was opened slowly, just a crack, and a woman leaning on a crutch peered at us. "AO what is it?" she asked. "AO we're not expecting deliveries today aya." Then the demon appeared in her wheelchair, smartly pushing the woman aside with her stick. "AO get away Betty, get away, who are these people?" She opened the door wider as she maneuvered her wheelchair to get a better look at us. Then she saw Chen. I was standing behind him and the whole scene was worthy of a movie. If her jaw could have dropped it would have done, but her face was so twisted and peaked with illness, so parched and tight there was no allowance for facial expressions, but she visibly stopped in her tracks at TM for a split second, as though life had changed in some way, only a second until she gained control again, but it was as though she knew she had met her match. Maybe for her it was similar to my first meeting with Chen when I felt myself leave the body and view the scene from above. Whatever it was, she knew something different was happening to her. It is said, and I believe it, that chronic illness or disability heightens an ear-TMS sensitivities, and this scene had all the appearances that she knew instinctively she was in the presence of someone, something very powerful, more so than herself. The majority of genuine psychics, for instance, do not enjoy robust health. If they did they would not be receptive to higher vibrations. I am not suggesting that Mary was psychic, but she was more receptive and sensitive than most people are when in normal health. "AO was wondering if I could have a look at your workshop, I've heard good things about it. As you can see, I'm disabled myself." Chen spoke easily, not over-friendly, just his usual self, exuding reassurance and kindness. He was perhaps the first man she had ever met whom she respected on sight. We were given a tour of the place. Mental illness needs special understanding and it seemed that about half the people there in the workshop suffered from one form or other of mental illness. The rest were similar to Mary, but not yet so severely ill, although a few were in wheelchairs, manual ones, that is. Mary was the queen of the place with her motorized chair and her ability to control and organize. It seemed that they met here in this large room every day to do hobbies, exchange ideas and socialize, a daycare for the handicapped. And although she was in fact a demon, the place would not have existed without her astute business sense and her organizational abilities. After that our calls at the workshop became more and more frequent. There would be something at home that Chen decided they could use: books, carving tools, woodworking supplies, paints. So off we would go to the dark green door with the black sign. As time went on a change could be seen in Mary. She sometimes laughed, a tinkling sound like water on stones, her face would try to smile, she was more relaxed and the forbidding stick disappeared. The atmosphere was better and the disabled folk welcomed our visits with open arms. Their lives were changed, the demon had mellowed. But she was possessive and had no intention of allowing any of them too much access to Chen. He was hers, definitely and irrevocably hers. In fact, what had happened was that she had fallen head over heels in love with him. The marvelous thing is that Chen did nothing to dissuade her. It was not unusual for fans of his books, particularly women, to become obsessive about him, and he invariably cut them off immediately. But with Mary it was different. She was not a fan of his books or his teaching, she was a soul in distress who had crossed his path. What she craved for from life and had no expectation of ever obtaining or experiencing was a strong positive emotion, a passion which would change and redirect her body chemistry, and it was unlikely any other man would ever have allowed her to fall in love with him. from the shriveled, bitter creature she had become through lifelong illness and rejection, it seemed her soul soared to new heights.